Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 340th program of Think Again. Think Again is a program of Borderlands Cooperative, a social change organisation based in Footscray. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today. Well, Jacques isn't here. I'm really pleased that Greg Barnes, SE, is joining us on the line to talk about the new hate laws in Australia. Greg is a barrister practising in criminal law, administrative law and human rights, and he lectures at RMIT University. Welcome to the program, Greg Barnes.
Welcome. Thank you.
So, pleasure to have you on. Firstly, Greg, I understand that new hate laws of various kinds have been introduced at the national level and also across some states, including Victoria. But I must say, I'm finding it all quite confusing and rather alarming too. So can you first give us a bit of a description of the new laws starting at the federal level?
Yeah, sure, Jennifer. I mean, you're right to be confused. The Commonwealth, we'll start at the Commonwealth level. The Commonwealth laws are... they don't actually create a hate speech crime. What they do is to effectively say that various forms of conduct or various state offences will constitute a hate crime, and that's done for the purposes of the minister being able to ban particular organisations in Australia. The difficulty is the definition of hate crime is extremely broad. It depends on, I mean, normally with these sorts of offences, it's, you know, the standard is what would a reasonable person think of those statements. In this particular case, it's a reasonable person who is of the group, if you like, who is outraged or hurt by the comments. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is that at the Commonwealth level, it does move into the area of free speech and the what's called the implied freedom of political communication, which the High Court has introduced around 30 years ago now, a bit more than 30 years ago, which says it's not a right, but it says that there's an implied freedom to exercise political communication, in other words, protests, etc. Which sort of brings us to New South Wales, where the Minns government has, on a couple of occasions now, lost cases in the New South Wales courts where it's tried to curtail or ban protests or keep protests out of particular areas for a period of time. It's now looking at banning particular slogans, which, of course, is the case in Queensland. And the particular slogans that Queensland has banned is the global intifada and secondly, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Victoria has, as I understand it, sort of started to look at some of those measures. The Allen government hasn't been sympathetic to those who've been protesting for Palestine, particularly in the CBD areas of Melbourne, and there have been charges brought against individuals for inciting hatred, etc. So it's a mixed bag. What's happened is around Australia there have been lawyers, including lawyers in Queensland and New South Wales, Melbourne, South Australia, where I spoke recently, all of whom are looking at and assisting people who find themselves being arrested by police on the basis of something they've said.
So there's a few things that you've mentioned there. So at the federal level, we're looking at impinging, I guess all of these are looking at impinging on freedom of speech, peaceful assembly, which can be referred to as, political censorship.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. And to ban slogans is really dangerous. I mean, look, it's one thing to ban those carrying swastikas and, you know, chanting Nazi slogans. They are universally reviled and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But slogans such as Global Intifada and From the River to the Sea have what you would call contested meaning. Now, there's no doubt that there are a number of people, particularly in the Jewish community, who find these slogans offensive. But because somebody finds it offensive, it shouldn't be enough to say, well, we're going to ban people now from using these terms. And the problem is the precedent it sets. You know, talking to friends of mine who are older than me and who were in the anti-Vietnam War protests, and probably some of your listeners would remember that, you know, they said that they were, you know, chanting slogans calling Johnson a baby killer and Australian politicians all sorts of names, but there was never any attempt to ban those slogans.
Mm.
And that's what makes this quite frightening.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, as you say, about contested meanings of those slogans, From the River to the Sea. Actually, even looking at Wikipedia, which has lots of different entries, gives a really interesting account of all the different ways it's been used. But there are definitely historians saying it was originally actually a Israeli Zionist slogan. So,
that's the problem. But, you know, if you're going to ban, as I say, look, there are certain slogans that are banned, and rightly so, but they're few and far between. One of the problems in Australia is we don't have constitutional protection for freedom of speech. In America, for all its faults, you have the First Amendment, which does give very wide scope to freedom of speech. In other countries such as South Africa and the UK, where you've had human rights acts, or in South Africa, a human rights charter like Canada, freedom of speech is enshrined in their constitutional structures. But in Australia, we don't have that, which makes it easier for governments to get away with what they're getting away with.
Yes. And I guess these sorts of laws are being introduced across different states. And as you say, I think Queensland has banned From the River to the Sea and globalised the Intifada. The Intifada also having multiple meanings as well.
Yeah, of course.
And I guess for me, I mean, as a layperson, not a legal person, I always find it a bit alarming when laws are passed that seem to have a sort of a partisan interest. And sometimes, you know, I've heard even in the past there'll be some law and it's because they don't want one person to get out of jail who's, you know, who is in for life and due. And I always think that doesn't sound like good law to me as a layperson, because the idea of justice is that it applies equally to everyone. So when you start defining it belongs to this group, we're taking sides with this group or this group's interpretation or this group because their feelings are hurt, we're taking this, shouldn't the law be more impartial?
Well, there's no doubt about that. Laws which impinge on one group in particular for the purposes of curtailing political activity are dangerous. They should be anathema to democracy. Laws which breach the rule of law, in other words, that the law applies to everyone and should respect and be underpinned by human rights, are also anathema. And, you know, it's not just people on the left who say that. It's you know, I've talked to traditional conservatives who don't like what's happening because they say, well, freedom of speech can be uncomfortable. There was a famous and very great American US Supreme Court judge called William O. Douglas. Interesting character. He was one of those who helped set up some of the land and other conservancies and environmental protections in the United States. But he made the point that, you know, freedom of speech in democracy, freedom of speech should be uncomfortable sometimes because otherwise you don't get change. Now, you know, that's not to say that you, I mean, if you personalize your, if you personalize your speech, that can be problematic. And there's been some seriously problematic speech in relation to Indigenous Australians. And I think what's disturbing to many Australians is that we allow on a daily basis, you know, systemic racism against Indigenous Australians, the First Peoples of this country. And there are no laws, no special laws for them. But in the context of a global conflict, we're now, you know, effectively what the Queensland government is doing is, and New South Wales is doing is choosing sides, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, I think I think so. It's pitting certain groups against other groups, and surely you know, the government keeps talking about wanting to promote social cohesion and social inclusion, which are the phrases of the day. Yet they're creating this situation where they're pitting, through our law and enforcement of law, certain groups against others, that the hurt of some groups is more important than the hurt of other groups as well.
Well, I think that's right. And the other area in which we're seeing the curtailment of freedom of speech is at universities. I've acted for a couple of students and advised in a couple of other matters where students have been, in some cases, expelled for their actions. Now, in a couple of cases that I've seen, their actions, I think, probably would have created fear because they went into people's offices. But on the other hand, there's a long history in universities, and again, going back to the Vietnam War, a long history in universities of agitation, of very robust protesting. It's the nature of kids. It's the nature of students. And, you know, we'd all, you know, I've got a couple of great friends, one in particular who was at Monash in the late 60s, early 70s, and he was involved in the sit-ins, and they'd occupy the registrar's office. And, you know, there was never any attempt to bring in laws to ban that sort of behaviour. And, look, I think he said, you know, a couple of students did get expelled, but, you know, their actions were right over the top. But generally speaking, this was allowed. I mean, if you look, and again, some of your listeners would remember Albert Langer. He's a bit before my time, but he was a famous leader of the anti-Vietnam War protests, and he was allowed to stay at Monash for years. Nowadays, you'd find himself expelled.
Yeah, it's quite incredible too, because I think universities were seen as a bastion of free thought and contested thought and debate, scholarly debate and protest and dissent.
Well, they've been heavy-handed. They've been heavy-handed in the way they've acted. To expel students is, you know, usually what you do if there's been, for example, you know, constant plagiarism, or they've been found guilty of a crime, serious crime. You know, I mean, it's a serious sanction. But certainly, at least one case I did in relation to a university. To be fair, the university's appeal process has worked, and we got the decision overturned. But it was, for this student, extremely distressing. And now, a decent human being, this student said, yeah, look, a couple of things I'd do differently. So was very, very rational and honest, and did not deserve to have their career put in great jeopardy. By virtue of exercising their rights.
Yes, and I guess in that mix, I had an interview on this program a while ago with Nick Reimer from a university in New South Wales. I think it was the University of Sydney. And
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it was talking about the collapsing of criticism of the state of Israel, the Zionist state of Israel, so that form of Zionist that the state of Israel acts according to and promotes. And so it was collapsing of criticism of the state of Israel with anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Which is gobsmacking, because I know myself quite, I have Jewish friends who regularly protest on behalf of Palestinians and against the state of Israel, and really, really deeply opposed and offended to the idea that all Jews should be aligned with what the state of Israel is doing. Yeah.
Well, that's very true, and Kevin Bell, a former Victorian Supreme Court judge, a very eminent human rights lawyer, made a similar point, I think, in the Financial Review recently when he announced he was joining the Jewish Council of Australia. But just coming back to universities, we've now got this Gillian Siegel, the anti-Semitism envoy, has Greg Craven, a former Vice Chancellor of the Australian Catholic University, running around doing report cards on universities on how they're tackling anti-Semitism. Again, this is a very, very dangerous step. You know, we don't do it in relation to racism, you know, how we're treating Indigenous people in our universities, for example, people from minority groups. This seems to be seen as different. The difficulty is that universities, generally speaking, have been very weak and they have not stood up for their tradition, which is to allow dissent, even very, very confronting dissent. Mm. I think one of the universities, I think it's La Trobe, I might be wrong, now has introduced a permit system. So you've got to get a permit to have a protest. And again, that can lead to censorship. I mean, you know, in a benign form, you might say, well, that's fine, you know, make sure that people aren't, you know, in areas they shouldn't be for security purposes or whatever. But, of course, it can be used to censor and close down speech.
Yeah, and of course we're seeing that trend, you know, in America. We've seen that a lot with universities losing funding.
Yeah.
And I believe there's a university report on anti-Semitism about to come out. So a lot of people are worried about that, the weaponization of, I guess, criticism of the State of Israel.
And look, you know, as we saw Virginia Bell, the Royal Commissioner, say yesterday, I think to Jeremy Liebley, you know, there is that issue that, you know, it is entirely, I mean, she didn't quite say this, but she was probing in this area, as is right. And I make no comment about where the Commission might go. But, you know, that there is, you know, we talk about conflation. You know, the criticism is there's conflation on the part of people who, you know, it's said their criticism of Israel and Zionism means that they become anti-Semitic. But we never look at it the other way, which is, of course, that the criticism of Israel is as legitimate as the criticism of Russia, of China, of the United States, of any nation in the world. And that is very different to an attack on the people themselves, as in the community, not the politicians, but the people themselves. And of course, their religion. No one. People who make hateful comments about Judaism, that is anti-Semitic. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. And in the same way that, you know, statements about Muslims are horrific. So I think that the other issue, Jennifer, just picking up on that, is we're not seeing the same effort put into curtailing anti-Islamic sentiment, and there is a lot of it.
Yes, sorry, I just want to quote something because I've been looking at that myself. The Scanlon Foundation, which runs a yearly survey on social cohesion, so they found negative attitude. This is from I think the 2004 survey. Negative attitudes to Muslims are much higher than to Christians and people of Jewish faith, with one in three, 34% of adults, so they say, saying they have a somewhat or very negative attitude towards Muslims. So, of course, it's 2024. And the for Jewish people, the anti-Jewish sentiment is 13%. So 13% against Jewish people and 34% against Muslims. And the Christians, against Christians is funny, it's sort of in between, I think 19%. So I guess it really worries me when I see that all forms of, you know, anti-certain religions or, you know, what are seen as racial groups or ethnic groups, or when they're not being treated in an even-handed way, in not just public rhetoric, but in our law as well. It just seems so disproportionate and unbalanced.
Well, you know, I'm aware of anti-Muslim sentiment. I've seen it. It's too often under the radar. One of the reasons is the media don't give it the attention. You know, attacks on mosques, attacks on buildings, graffiti, harassment of people, it goes on. And, you know, particularly the northern suburbs of Melbourne are areas where there's a big Muslim population, you have this issue. But, you know, I've certainly heard people make, you know, ridiculous comments such as, oh, all Muslims are terrorists. And,
oh, well, Pauline Hanson, you know, I haven't, there's not one good Muslim.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And look, you know, I don't like what Hanson said. I thought it was appalling and it was racism. But I noticed there was no sort of flurry of, well, you know, she should be charged or we should ban her from saying this.
Yeah, or make a law to say she can't say it. And
that hateful, I mean, it is covered to some extent by hate speech.
Yeah.
Comments.
I'm wondering, Greg, if you can say something about police, the reliance on policing to protect these new laws, uphold the new laws.
Well, police are duty-bound to do so because that's their role in our society. I think that, and we've seen this in the UK, just outrageous arrests of people in their 70s and 80s and 90s because they are protesting in support of or are members of the Palestinian Action Group, I think it's called. That's really poor policing, in my view. Now, the police would say, oh, well, the law applies to everyone, whether you're 90 or whether you're 20. But they have discretion. And, you know, they should exercise that discretion. Look, police have a difficult job. On the other hand, and I have seen it in the context of Tasmania, where it's a little bit smaller, but I've seen interactions and I've been involved with them with police where they've actually been great. They've suggested safe areas out of traffic where protests can take place, and it's, you know, it's a workable relationship, and there's a long history here of protest movements, particularly in the Greens, in the Green area. But I think, you know, there's no doubt there's been some misconduct on the part of police. We saw that in New South Wales. You know, in Queensland, we've seen people dragged off. So what people should be doing is there are legal monitors who go to most of these demonstrations. Lawyers will turn up and monitor. If people do get themselves into trouble, there are lawyers that they can call, or there's Facebook groups, and they should contact them if they do get into trouble, because police need to be accountable. There should be, I mean, I think what's happened with the Minns government in New South Wales is it's tried to essentially use the police as an arm of its political apparatus.
Yeah, I think that was what issue. I think that's what my I had in mind when I asked you the question. Police are in a position they have to uphold the law that's given. They don't make the laws. But should the police be used in this way anyway?
Well, I think that, you know, in the case of the Minns government, this was political on the part of Minns, who's obviously extremely pro Israel. Well, certainly, as I don't think I've ever heard any criticism by Minns of the Israeli government's actions.
No.
So let's say he's neutral on the issue, but he certainly has not reached out to the Muslim community in the way that he has to the Jewish community.
Yeah. It's not good leadership. Not good leadership.
Well, he needs to be. He needs to be. Look. There's no doubt there have been, and you know, there is anti-Semitism in our community, and I think Richard Ackland has pointed out that the journalist has pointed out that the rise has come, you know, post, well, you know, as a result of Gaza. That's not to excuse it for a moment, but you know, political leaders have an obligation to say, you know, picking up on the Scanlon Foundation, look, we're also aware of heightened attacks on the Muslim community, and this is intolerable on both sides. Mm-hmm. But what he's done is, you know, he to stop pro-Palestinian protests, he effectively, you know, the police, you know, used their powers. The commissioner used his powers to close down areas for protest for a period of months, and that seems to me to be political policing.
Yes, so thanks, Greg. I realise we're coming quickly to the end of our, near the end of our program, so I'm just wondering, we obviously need to fight back against these laws, and we do have a lot of keen activists listening to this program and to 3CR. So what do you suggest people can do to challenge these new so-called hate laws?
I think people are going to find that they'll be challenged in the High Court. I would not be surprised to see a number of cases go to the High Court. I think it's inevitable that these cases will go to the High Court. And by cases, I mean New South Wales laws, Queensland laws, Commonwealth laws are going to end up there inevitably. And so in the High Court, and Anne Toomey, who I think is one of the best people on these issues, she's now Emeritus Professor, I think, of Constitutional Law at Sydney Uni, has made this point a couple of times in a very good piece on The Conversation back in January, talked about this and the dangers of government in legislating in this area. So I think people need to watch that space. But if they are find themselves being arrested or being charged, certainly have a look at those legal networks that are out there that can support them.
And I guess, thanks for that, Greg. And I guess the other point I'd like to put to you is that people shouldn't be, let these laws have a chilling effect. You know, they can be smart about what they do, but let's not all be silent because we're scared of, you know, being arrested.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, it is that they are designed to have a chilling effect. You know, I when the laws, the new hate speech laws came in from the Commonwealth, I gave some advice to two protest groups who said, can we say this, can we say that? I know that in South Australia advice has been given. People have been saying, what can we say, what can't we say?
Mm.
So the chilling effect is there and, again, not desirable in a democracy.
Mm. So that's really great advice. And I guess for all the people organising protests, I guess they're all probably well aware from now on to get some advice about that. Like, which is a bit of a shame, but they have to even take advice in what chance they have led at their protests.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us on the program today, Greg Barnes.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for helping us understand. It's a real patchwork of new hate laws in Australia, which really reflects, I think, on bad law composition as well. It's so confusing. But thanks for alerting us to the dangers of threats to free speech, and which are already taking effect. And I'd be very happy, if there are any developments, I'd be very happy to have you back on the program again to talk some more about those developments.
Be very happy to come on, and thanks for having me, Jennifer.
Thank you, Greg.
The law is part of our everyday lives, including when we buy something, use a service, have a job, or rent a house. The law can be used to help protect and support families when there is violence in the home or disputes over parenting arrangements. Sometimes we might need to understand the law to navigate specific government systems like Centrelink, getting a residency visa, or if we come into contact with the police. Community legal centres provide free, quality legal advice and assistance to help people with everyday legal problems. We focus on working with people who are experiencing disadvantage, such as financial hardship, family violence, homelessness, and discrimination. Community legal centres are independent, non-government organisations and can be found across Victoria and Australia. If you're experiencing a legal problem, your local community legal centre may be able to help. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres Victoria at www.fclc.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning into Think Again live on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to contact us or give us feedback, you can email Borderlands. The new email address is info@borderlandscooperative.net. That's info@borderlandscooperative.net. Our programs are available by a podcast on a variety of platforms and on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, please enjoy Milku Mana by King Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.